This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and with Mary Jo Bang, who is holding in her hand a new book just out, a translation of Dante. And tell us what the name of this book is.
This is Paradiso, the third book of the Divine Comedy, and which is a poem in which a man named Dante, a character named Dante, goes all the way down the nine circles of hell and then up the seven terraces of Mount Purgatory to the terrestrial heaven, which is Eden, that garden that Adam and Eve vacated and is now empty. And that's the jumping off place for the penitents in purgatory to go to heaven. And there are 10 heavens, and he travels all of them.
And you translated all of them.
That's right.
And what are the other two books that you translated prior to this?
One's Inferno, the second is Purgatorio, and now this one is Paradiso.
And so we finally have finished the Divine Comedy, and you've spent quite a bit of time, 20 years on it, and we're going to just have some samples from it today. And I would like the audience to know that I read this book and I understood every word of it. It wasn't ornate, it wasn't a relic, it was colloquial, it was understandable. And just to prove that, we're going to read the first page of the canto number one, which is, there are nine stanzas in this page we're going to hear of 47 entire stanzas. That's just canto one, and we have 33 cantos. Let us hear the first page.
Canto one. The glory of the one who moves everything penetrates the universe and shines more in one part and less in another. I was in the heaven that gets more of its rays and saw things that those who come down from on high can't grasp or else can't say, because nearing its desire, our understanding achieves such depth our memory can't follow along. Even so, as much of the holy kingdom as I could treasure up in my mind will now be the subject of my song. O good Apollo, for this last task, make me the kind of vessel of your worth you demand to grant the beloved laurel. Up to this point, one of the two Parnassian peaks was plenty for me, but now I need both to enter this final playing field. Enter my chest and inspire, as you did when you dragged Marcius, sheath and shelterless, from the skin of his limbs. O divine power, if you lend me enough of yourself that I can reveal even a flicker of the blissful realm inscribed on my mind, you'll see me reach the foot of your beloved tree and crown myself with its leaves, to which I'll be worthy by virtue of you and my theme.
Now that is plain English, however cadenced, how the phraseology is perfect, and it's elegant language, but it's plain speaking. And that is what you've given to the world. And that's what was needed, because people were scared to death of Dante. And now they know they do not have to be. Who is Apollo?
Well, Apollo is the god of light and poetry and the hunt and many other things. But each of these volumes, Inferno, Purgatorio, and Paradiso, Dante starts out with an invocation to the gods of Greek and Roman mythology. And throughout the Divine Comedy, he mixes stories from myth with Tuscan history and with biblical stories. And so he wants, I think, the reader to understand that these moral lessons have been available throughout time and that they need to be incorporated in our own thinking about how to behave in the world, how to contribute to the social fabric without desecrating it.
And there are politics here. Can you tell us just quickly what Dante was experiencing as a person?
Well, as a person, Dante has been exiled from Florence. And Florence is the city where he was born, where he married, where he lived with his family. And because of these political factions, which were so vociferous in their anger towards each other, so partisan, whenever one party would come into power, they would exile the other party and sometimes even burn their houses. So Dante has been exiled, and he's never allowed to return to Florence in his entire lifetime. He is taken in by different noble families from and goes from one city to another. He can't stay for long. You're a guest. So he's writing during this period of exile, trying to get people to understand that this is not the way to solve social problems. And his poem, he really hopes and believes that this poem will make a difference.
And it does. And it does. It has been one of our milestones since ancient time. Well, it's 700 years old, isn't
it? That's right.
Yes. And you embarked upon your lifetime journey, 20 years of it, to say, I don't know whatever got into you, but as you said, you wrote the first canto and it was such fun, you thought you'd try the second. I'm sure that's how it happens. But if you read it, you notice that there are colloquialisms, and you even substitute some modern day names in there. But the curiosity is how you took archaic Italian and made it work for us. And we'd love to hear an example of how you did that.
Well, in some ways, all I'm doing is lowering the register of the language.
Mm.
And for any individual word, as you know, if you look at a thesaurus, you'll see many words that are the same equivalent. And some of them are very elevated, anachronistic. Some are slang. So there's a poetry thermometer.
Mm.
And translators tend to translate Dante from the top of the poetry thermometer. And that's not how Dante wrote. He wrote in the vernacular because he wanted everyone to be able to read it, not just those that had specialized knowledge of Latin, which was the usual way. So I've brought the register of the language down, and sometimes what I've used is something that is contemporary and colloquial. So the reason for doing that, I wanted readers to see their own world in the poem, and language does that. So I'll read a little section where I make a choice of something that is a very contemporary word. If I was freed of the first doubt by way of her smiling little chat, I was already deeply enmeshed in the next one. I said, I was happy staying wonderstruck, but now I'm marveling at the way I'm able to go beyond these weightless elements. At which she, after a charitable sigh, looked straight at me with that look of pity a mother gives a kid who's acting bonkers, and began, all things have order among themselves, and this orderliness is what makes the universe resemble God.
Bonkers.
Bonkers.
And what is the Italian word for that?
The Italian word that Dante uses is delirio, which means it's a cognate. So delirio looks like delirium, which indeed it means. But if we described a child being delirious, we would think that they had a fever. And that's not what Beatrice is dealing with. She's dealing with a kid whose mind is racing here and there, and we might even say is bouncing off the walls. And she does the equivalent of standing the child in front of her and saying, okay, I'm going to tell you exactly how it is. So what word would substitute for delirium? Well, kid acting crazy, but that's too broad. And we don't like to use those mental health words anymore in a kind of a casual way, because they do mean something to people who have mental health issues. So looking in a thesaurus, one of the words that was there was bonkers, and the moment I saw it, I thought, yes, that's how we would describe kids who are just, you know, so flighty that we have to make sure that they're listening to us.
Well, we have had the great privilege of getting an MRI of your brain right now, and to think that you went through this thought process for so many words. How did you keep the energy in the language? How did you keep the energy in yourself to make the energy in the language? How did you do it?
Well, I think it became an obsession, actually.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, I always describe it as the equivalent of working the largest crossword puzzle you can imagine. And if you do crossword puzzles, you know that, you know, you try to find that word that fits in that space, you know, four letters that mean such and such, that cooperate with that vertical word that goes through them. You find one, and you think, oh, that's great. And then a lot of them around that area fall into place, but some don't. And then you have to force yourself to find another word, and then everything falls into place.
I don't consider the crossword puzzle anyway part of the process of the writing, translating this book, but it's an interesting analogy because we know how you fool with language and how you play with language and how you make it fit what you want, how you substitute it, how you love it so much. I think each one has a different tone. Each of your books of the Divine Comedy have a kind of a different tone. They have your voice, they have the colloquial, understandable, accessible quality. But do you feel you didn't even learn anything from writing the first two, that each time it's a whole new ball game?
Well, the situation changes,
yeah,
because Dante's in hell, and in hell he's meeting people, and Virgil, this Roman poet, is acting as his guide, and they're talking to each other about what they've seen. And sometimes Dante is so overwhelmed, he actually faints because it's just too much, taking in the sorrow. And there's a background noise of people moaning and screaming. And you can imagine how, you know, a human would be overwhelmed by that. So the tenor of what's going on, of what he's saying, the descriptions, is very different. Purgatorio is more hopeful, even though there is punishment on every level. You're punished as a way of achieving penance. And until you achieve penance, you have to stay on that level. And then once you do, you go to the next level, the next, until you too reach, that's right, the terrestrial garden. But you decide, interestingly enough, you find out at one point when he's talking to someone that you decide when you've reached that. Nobody adjudicates that. You know when you have reached that level of penance that allows you to proceed.
That's so, honoring the self.
Yes, absolutely. And allowing, you know, the Godhead is allowing you to know yourself. So there's a hopeful tone and not quite as much drama, although there is definitely drama. So in Paradiso, the same conceit exists. He meets people. They talk about their experience in the world. And there's a fascinating thing about Paradiso in that there are many heavens, but everyone is happy in whatever heaven they achieve. And they're not geographically or materially farther from God. They all sit in this throne amphitheater, which Dante describes as a celestial rose because the amphitheater reminds him of the petals of a rose. That's where you experience the love and the light of God. They're all there equally. Nobody's anywhere else, but they experience that light, that bliss, differently based on their lives on earth.
That is the genius. That is the genius of this. Now, we heard just 9 stanzas of 40 seven, just canto one, and there were about four pages of notes following that. So each, you can imagine, with 33 cantos, each maybe four pages, and then maybe four to more pages of notes, that you were quite particular to make sure everyone knew the source of your thinking, this where you got a word. And that is the thing that I just couldn't conceive of you doing.
Well, it was a lot of work. It took me a long time. It was not nearly as much fun as translating.
Yeah.
But the research I did was necessary for me to understand what the poem was saying, what Dante was saying, why he was saying it. And I felt I had to incorporate that for the reader.
But that's Mary Jo Bang. That is so indicative of the way you live and work and give more than is asked for. I don't think it's are there notes like that in Hollanders?
Well,
I don't remember.
There are notes.
But not as consummate as your notes.
They're different.
Okay.
Because I also
incorporate
some of my translation choices and discuss those.
That's right. They're inimitable.
Right.
That's right. Well, when did you begin this particular book, this third book? What year?
It was during the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
It was 2021. It was...
That's not very much time to do this.
No, no. And it was because of the pandemic, as difficult as that period was for all of us, it did prove to be useful in terms of giving me a lot of hours. I wasn't able to leave the house most of the time. And so there was nothing else to do but this. And I made a lot of progress. And I also had a Dantist, Gina Sacchi, who was very interested in my project and who had offered to read each canto and all of the notes. And so as I was writing, I was also sending her a canto and its notes, and she would send me back notes. So then I was revising.
That helps.
It helps to make things go along quickly. Because with both Inferno and Purgatorio, I took 2-year breaks with each of those. And of course, that prolongs things. So I was in a hurry to finish this, and I had the time to do it.
Just think, you have a book of poems from 2023, and now Paradiso in 2025. In 3 years, you had two volumes published. In 3 years. You're a creative machine.
Well,
and you have more on the hopper.
Well, but, you're writing for a long time before those publications come out.
Of course.
So.
But it just shows, though, the alacrity with which you work. You're a worker bee.
I am.
For sure. There are a couple of things that I... took away. One is that light is a character. Light itself is a character in this book. Don't you believe that?
Well, God is light for Dante.
But the light in Beatrice's eyes, and the light, the cross in the sky. I love that so much. Light is almost in every canto, right?
I believe it.
Yes,
I believe,
and that is
right.
Just so, it does something to you. The word does something to the reader. You react to that word. Viscerally to that word light. It does something to you. So the book is actually full of light. And another thing that I think of is that he always thinks he can't write the things he sees, that he's not up to it. He can't possibly, he has the lexicon to translate what he sees into language. Do you think that's very winning?
I think it is. I just want to say about the light, it's paradise. So, and since God is light, there's going to be light all over. And
but
love
it's just
is light.
Such a great word.
Yeah. Well, it's, in some regards, it's an empty abstract, but he contextualizes it and so that it is meaningful. And it's true all the way back to Inferno. There's this idea. He's also a very visual poet. And so he's always describing, which is why the work comes alive the way it does.
Oh, it's imagistic throughout.
Exactly. We see this world. He creates it visually. Otherwise, if it were pure abstraction, it would be very boring. It would be like theological, scholastic writing.
Which is really boring.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Yeah. And what is an empyrean?
The empyrean is God, God's mind and light, and it's the center of the universe. It's without any kind of planetary bodies, with any particulate matter. It's just this, in a sense, it's a concept. And Beatrice even tells Dante, the Bible has to give hands and feet to saints because your mind isn't able to conceive them without that. But once you reach enlightenment, so the empyrean is enlightenment. It's surrounded by these hierarchies of angels, which determine the tone of all of the bodies of the solar system, and those act on humans. So everything is interconnected, and as Beatrice says at the beginning of this, there's an order, and that order is the mind of God.
Mm.
And all of that is centered in the empyrean.
I love it. You know, in modern day terms, we do not use the word enlightenment anymore. We use the word liberation, which is the same thing. And so we began with the first page of the book, and we'd like to end our talk with the last page of the book. We're not expecting you to understand the story by what you hear, but you can understand that the language is very hearable, understandable, acceptable, and accessible.
These are the last 13 lines where Dante has to somehow end his poem, and this is how he does it. Like the geometer who gives their all to squaring the circle and still can't uncover through reasoning the principle they need, that's how I was at that new sight, wanting to see how the image fit the circle and how it inwears itself there. But my own wings weren't up to that. Had it not been that my mind was suddenly struck by a bolt from the blue, and I got my wish.
Mm.
At that, the plug was pulled on my lofty fantasy, but my desire and will were already being turned, just like the wheel that is equally moved by the love that moves the sun and the other stars.
The voice of Mary Jo Bang. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the library for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinepit Fund, the Rivada Foundation of the Logan family, friends of the program, Natalie Canavore and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin is our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.